first case for argument this morning is Westfield Insurance Company against Sheehan Construction Company. Mr. McNamara.
Thank you, Your Honors. My name is David McNamara. I represent the appellants, Sheehan Construction Company, Inc., the Allied class. May it please the court. Because of the limited amount of time, I do want to note that if I don't address every issue we raised in our brief, we certainly aren't waiving those, and we would ask the court to respectfully consider those. The issue in this matter, Your Honors, is whether Westfield Insurance Company's CGL policy sold to Sheehan Construction Company provided insurance protection for the continuous and repeated exposure to harmful conditions experienced by class members in their newly constructed homes. Sheehan Construction Company, in this case, Your Honors, acted merely as a construction manager in charge of coordinating work of subcontractors to build these specific houses. The class members purchased their houses from a separate developer and or from prior homeowners. The cost back in 1999 to 2001 was approximately $300,000 to $400,000 per home, and the negligent work resulted in repair costs to each of these facilities of over $100,000. Sheehan and its insurance broker knew that Sheehan never did any of the actual construction on any of these houses, and Sheehan desired coverage to protect it in the event of damage to the projects caused by the subcontractors.
This is just a commercial general liability policy. I assume it wanted a commercial general liability policy for all the reasons people do, including the question if a 2x4 falls on somebody's head or if somebody has some other accident on site. I think the question is whether in Indiana this kind of policy covers essentially performance failures.
That's correct, Your Honor, except yes, they do cover performance failures, and Indiana recognizes that. If you look to the Indiana Supreme Court decision of DeZutti, now that was decided in 1980 before the additional expanded coverage in 1986. But DeZutti also, that policy to a general contractor had occurrence for property damage clauses in it, and DeZutti then went further as to what was the cause of the particular accident.
So it's your position that the policy incorporates the 86 change?
This policy does. It specifically incorporated it in this situation, Your Honor. However, in this case,
an exclusion.
Right.
There was an additional endorsement.
Here and in your brief, you keep relying on this 86 change to the general policy, which was expressly negated for this particular policy. I don't see what happened in 86, therefore, has any bearing on.
The 86, Your Honor, expanded the coverage, and clearly in Westfield's situation,
hadn't been negated by the Your Work Clause in this policy.
The additional endorsement attempted negated.
Why do you say attempted to negate
it? It just did.
It deleted the language that you're talking about from this policy. It replaced a new section, I guess.
That's correct, Your Honor. However, it didn't change the definition of your work. And your work was defined as the actual construction done by that particular contractor. And it didn't specifically exempt subcontractor work in that clause. And then when you couple that with their expanded coverage endorsement, which they added to the policy, and the definitions in that particular new endorsement, that's what we submit raises coverage in this particular situation. The policy provision I'm referring to is the general liability expanded endorsement. And that particular endorsement says the entire house is defined as Sheehan's product. And then since...
And frankly, I don't know how that actually helps you, because when the entire house is Sheehan's product, then your argument that the damage to the window may not have been covered, but the damage to the carpets and all the rest of it were, where you try to subdivide it, really falls apart. Because if you conceptualize the house, which I actually think is probably a very sound way to look at it here, the general contractor is offering to deliver a house, and nobody really cares whether they subcontract it all out or they subcontract half and they do the other half.
There, I think, Your Honor, you're getting into the economic loss doctrine, which wouldn't apply.
No, in a way, but I'm pointing out an inconsistency in your argument, I think, your way of conceptualizing this project.
The conception, Your Honor, is this. You have coverage for an occurrence and property damage, I think, clearly within their definitions. Then you have the your work exclusion and you have the your product exclusion. Now, the your product exclusion shouldn't apply in this situation because it exempts real property from that exclusion. And clearly, the houses are real property.
The houses are real property or the land underneath them is real property?
Well, the whole thing, Your Honor, is considered real property under Indiana law.
Well, look, the Glee endorsement throughout this policy, it excludes the cost of repairing or replacing your work defectively or incorrectly done.
Well, it would be Sheehan's work, Your Honor, not someone else's work.
But Sheehan's work, as you just said, is the whole house.
In the general liability expanded endorsement, it would be the whole house. As far as the your work is concerned, your work is not Sheehan's because Sheehan didn't do any of the actual construction. That's where I think this policy, when you lump it all together and read it as a total policy, it's ambiguous. Sheehan spent over $70,000 to buy insurance.
Yeah, but is that per house or per 40 houses or per all of southern Indiana?
No, ma'am, it's for that particular project.
So it's over 40, or how many houses was it?
17.
Okay, 17 houses.
And for $70,000, what did it buy? It anticipated buying coverage.
It was a standard CGI policy rather than a performance bond.
Well, Your Honor,
how much
can't
would a performance bond have cost?
Well, a performance bond, Your Honor, is for the benefit of the owner to make sure the project is completed. A CGL policy is bought by the contractor strictly to cover negligence of other workers in performing their job.
Well, or, you know, my example of a 2x4 falling on someone's head. I mean, you have CGL policies for all sorts of mishaps. Construction sites are dangerous places.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. It covers that. I concede that.
So I don't think we have a situation here and there in your brief. You seem to suggest that if we didn't rule in your favor, this would be entirely illusory. But I don't see that at all, actually.
Well, Your Honor, if you look again at what is property damage, it's basically any damage. It doesn't delineate between property of the general contractor, property of the homeowner, property of anyone else. Damage to property is damage to any property by the terms of the insurance policy itself and the definition of
Except
property
that
damage.
Then there's the exclusion for damage to your work, and then it defines your work to mean work or operations performed by you or on your behalf.
And on your
subcontractors.
On your behalf, Your Honor, is on behalf of the owner of the property, which would be, in this case, the developer.
Why isn't it on the general contractor's behalf? Did anyone try to sue the subcontractors ever?
Yes, Your Honor. In the trial court itself, the original action in the Marion Circuit Court, Sheehan Construction brought in as third-party defendants in that case several of the subcontractors. So they were in the case originally. In reading, again, the policy as a whole, And when you put in the subcontractor exemptions, taking that one sentence out, which is in the original policy, but then you put in the general liability expanded endorsement, this creates, I submit, an ambiguity in this policy in just what does it cover, given the definition of occurrence, which is an accident including repeated exposure to hazardous conditions. And we certainly have that with water and moisture damage occurring throughout the entire period of time. So we have
an occurrence. And of course you have the fungi exclusion too, right?
We didn't raise fungi in the trial court or in the Marin Circuit Court case at all, so that was never an issue in this case.
I don't understand that. What do you mean it's never an issue in the case? It's one of the grounds on which the district judge decided this case.
I understand he did, Your Honor, but there was never an assertion by the Alex or the class in the original action as to fungi or bacteria in any of the houses. So why he threw that in, I don't know. Although counsel for Westfield did mention it in his summary judgment motion, but we never raised that issue in the trial court or the district court.
I don't know why the issues in the case are limited to those you raised. Issues in a case include those raised by both sides.
I fully agree, Your Honor. But I would think.
Why would you have raised it? It's an exclusion. I guess I don't follow your thinking here, because I don't know why you would have said, but don't worry, Judge, you can rule against us because there's an exclusion in the policy for fungi and mold damage.
I didn't even raise that, Your Honor.
Of course you didn't raise it. Why would you raise it? Because it would only hurt you.
Well, that's correct. So I didn't raise it.
It was raised
by the insurance company.
I understand.
If there were an issue in the case, it gets decided. You can't tell us that only the issues you raise are legitimate grounds of decision.
No, Your Honor.
I guess you can tell us that, but it's wrong.
Express the opinion that you didn't tell.
My point, Your Honor, is this. In the trial court original case on the issue of harm and the issue of damages, it was never raised as to...
So are you making a waiver argument? I'm just trying to put this in perspective here.
As far as the district court is concerned, Your Honor, we moved the judgment that the circuit court decided as to the liability basis of Sheehan Construction Company. And my point is this. In that judgment, the issue was never raised. The trial court didn't decide any issue as far as fungus, et cetera, was concerned. And that's why we didn't note it in this case, from our side anyway. Yes, Westfield raised that point, but since it wasn't in or a part of the original decision, I don't think it applies herein.
Well, suppose, to indulge us for a moment, we thought that we do need to think about the effect of this exclusion in the policy on your position. Do you have a response on the merits? What is its scope, in your opinion, and what does it do to your ability to recover?
It shouldn't do anything, Your Honor, unless there is some assertion by either the contractor or the homeowners that they've been damaged by fungus.
Well, but they do assert that. They talk about water leaks, warped floors, you know, all sorts of damage, mold that comes in because of the water. It seems to me it's very much in play.
But we didn't allege any damages resulted from that. In other words, nobody was injured by breathing air with mold in it, this type of damage. That's why we submit it really, it's a non-issue as far as the district court was concerned. It wasn't a part of the circuit court case originally. I think, Your Honor, Indiana law changed with the recent Bulger decision, which recognized the subcontractor exemptions. Our expert in this area, Mr. Thomas Corridon, opined in this case that there would be coverage under even the Westfield policy because he felt there was an ambiguity in it given the endorsement attempting to removing that
right.
exception.
Before you get any further, you're about to be in your
yes.
rebuttal time, but I just want to say that your opponents have offered the opinion that this expert that you proffered was really doing nothing more than suggesting the way the policy should be interpreted. And that, of course, is a job for the court, first the trial court, now this court. And so I'm not sure that any weight needs to be put or can be put on this expert's legal views of the contract interpretation.
Your Honor, he wasn't really giving a legal view. Mr. Corridon was a claims manager for many years. He handled these policies. He handled these claims.
His testimony is about how to read the policies, and that's what the judge figures out.
Well, all due respect, I disagree with Your Honor, because he merely was opining that if this claim came to me in my capacity as a claim manager, I would honor it and pay it.
But if you state it that way, the testimony is irrelevant. It had no bearing. What he would do is completely irrelevant to the issues in this case.
Well, I respectfully disagree.
I'm saying if this claim came to me, I would go to Disneyland. Well, who cares whether he would go to Disneyland?
Well, I think in the context of insurance and insurance policies, that type of experience...
The only way to make it relevant is to say he was offering his opinion about the meaning of the language. And as Judge Wood said, that's the judge's province. That's the judge's job.
I agree with Your Honor that interpretation of the policy itself is for the court to decide. He merely offered his opinion based upon his experience in this area. I would like to reserve the remainder of my time for any rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honors.
Counsel. Mr. Smith.
May it please the court. I have one housekeeping matter. We had cited a district court opinion in our brief at pages 24 and 26, Stanley Martin Companies, Inc. versus Ohio Casualty Group. A couple of weeks after we filed our brief, the Fourth Circuit did reverse that decision.
Did you file a Rule 28J letter?
We did not. Mr. McNamer did, identifying that case is now a Fourth Circuit decision. But I did want to alert the court to that. I want to try to address some of the questions that were raised. Number one, in terms of the fungi exclusion, there was both allegations of mold damage as well as a finding in the circuit court judgment that, in fact, there was mold damage. The lawsuit's complaint alleged that fungus growth had developed out of the sidings at a few locations and that mold had developed along the floors beneath the windows. There was an engineering report that was attached to the complaint. It specifically stated that the Allegs needed to treat the wall cavities for mold and that the decay of wood was caused by low forms of plant life, fungi, that convert wood substance into food.
Fungi are not plants.
I'm sorry?
Fungi are not plants.
I agree, Your Honor. That probably was a misstatement by the engineer. Also, the judgment entry expressly stated that mold developed below the window areas at the floor levels and in the crawl spaces. So that is the reason why, both in the coverage denial letter as well as in our summary judgment motion, that we did raise the fungi and the mold exclusion. In terms of your work, Judge Wood, you correctly pointed out that your work is defined to include both the work of the named insured as well as work done on its behalf. The cases that we've cited in our brief establish that work performed on behalf of a general contractor is the work of a subcontractor. That's what the case law has said. And that is the reason why taking out the subcontractor exception to the your work exclusion is so significant in this case, and really takes this out of the 1986 ISO and really throws it back into the precursor that was issued back in 1973.
Now, Mr. Smith, would you say that it's a fair characterization of the law in this area is simply that there are a couple of views out there among the states as about the way one interprets this policy that the industry has put out, and Indiana is perhaps on a more strict track than Florida, for instance?
I would agree completely, Your Honor. And in fact, when you look at surrounding jurisdictions, there are two schools of thought. One is that because the damage is the natural and ordinary consequences of the general contractor's faulty workmanship, there is no incurrence. And again, workmanship is defined with respect to your work, which includes the work of subcontractors. And Indiana, as well as Arkansas, Maryland, Pennsylvania, there's a South Carolina case and also an Illinois Court of Appeals decision that have followed along those lines.
Now, do we have any hint from the Supreme Court of Indiana, as opposed to the intermediate appellate courts, that it may be moving in the Florida direction?
None at all, Your Honor. In fact, the latest Indiana decision, which was the Harvey case, to put it in the context, R. N. Thompson and Worcester both did the natural and ordinary consequences. In Harvey, the insurance company in that case asked that standard to be applied to personal physical conduct. In that situation, somebody pushed another person who fell down an embankment and drowned. And the court came in, the Indiana Supreme Court came in and Harvey and said, we're not going to apply the natural and ordinary consequences beyond commercial settings. And in fact, when you look at Harvey, it cites with approval to R.N. Thompson as the appropriate standard for the occurrence issue in Indiana in a commercial setting. Now, that also, I think, dovetails very conveniently into what some other jurisdictions are doing, including Florida. And that is, they are not applying Indiana's natural and ordinary consequences test. They are saying that there is an occurrence because the damage was not expected or intended by the general contractor. So, in essence, they are applying Indiana's personal conduct standard to a commercial setting. And R.N. Thompson and Worcester and Harvey's citation to R.N. Thompson with approval indicates that's not the correct standard when you're dealing with a commercial setting in Indiana. When you look at all of the cases that the appellant cited, every single one of them uses that was the damage expected or intended by the general contractor. And that's not the case law in Indiana. Indiana is completely different. I also think it's very important to note that the decisions cited by the appellant all involve a true 1986 ISO CGL policy, which contains the subcontractor exception to the year work exclusion. And two of them, and I think this is extremely important, two of those cases specifically said, insurance company, if you don't want to cover this risk, even under our analysis, then issue the endorsement that takes out the subcontractor exception to the year work exclusion.
Now, given that the fact that this one was issued here, do we need to get into this somewhat metaphysical discussion about whether an exception to an exclusion equals coverage or whether an exception to an exclusion has no meaning once you've put the exclusion in and then you've taken it back out again?
The R. N. Thompson court, I apologize, the Worcester court, Your Honor, specifically addressed that issue. In its decision, one of the arguments that was made by the general contractor was, you know, look, we've got this subcontractor exception, and that should have a bearing on how we define the term occurrence and property damage. And Worcester came in and said, no, you don't look at exceptions to exclusions as creating coverage or not creating coverage. So it has some bearing if we were dealing with a pure 1986 ISO CGL form. But we're not dealing with that in this case because we do have the subcontractor exception, which has been removed by the endorsement. The other thing that I would like to comment on was the argument about Bulger. That was a case that involved a subcontractor's CGL form. And a subcontractor's work is going to be considered a lot smaller in scope than a general contractor's. as DeZutti and some of these other cases recognize, the general contractor's work is the entire project. In this case, it was the entire homes. A subcontractor performs only a component part of the overall picture. So if a subcontractor's work damages other work in the home, and you're looking at it from the standpoint of a subcontractor CGL policy, it's a completely different analysis. Because we are then talking about work beyond the subcontractor's work being damaged. And that's, Bulger, again, does involve a subcontractor CGL rather than a general contractor CGL. The premium issue. We produced, during the course of discovery, our underwriting file. They had ample opportunity, if they believed that they were overcharged, to take a deposition of an underwriter to bring in evidence as to what other carriers were charging for this type of coverage, to even put into evidence any part of our underwriting file. And that was not done. There is just speculation as to, well, gosh, we paid way too much for this premium. Well, the premium is not just for one construction site. It is for all the construction work that Sheehan was doing. They were not limited to just this one Crystal Lake subdivision.
So it's not, in fact, the 17 houses?
No.
Okay.
No, there's nothing in the policy that says, hey, we're only covering these 17 houses. It's a CGL policy. It covers any work that they are doing as a general contractor.
By the way, how does the policy in Indiana, how does the premium in Indiana compare with the premium in Florida for this kind of policy?
I don't know, and that's one of the. I would suspect that Indiana's is lower, given what's going on down in Florida.
But I just wondered if we knew.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that they could have developed if they wanted to, because again, we did produce our underwriting file during discovery.
So does the record show what area is served by Sheehan Construction Company? Is it limited to Indianapolis or the greater?
I don't believe that there's anything in the record that addresses that, and I cannot recall whether the policy contains any endorsements that make it applicable to anything other than Indiana.
One of the arguments counsel made was, well, if we interpret the policy and the exemption the way you would like us to, then what's the point of the policy? What does it cover?
Well, the R.N. Thompson Court addressed that very specific issue, Your Honor, and that is, if there is damage to property other than Sheehan's work, if the defective work of subcontractors caused a roof to cave in and damage personal property within the home, that's covered, because that is damage to other than the general contractor's work. If a 2x4 falls down and hurts somebody or falls down on a car and damages it, that is covered as well. And R.N. Thompson made very clear that is the risk that is intended to be insured through the CGL.
So if we were to look at the pleadings in the underlying case that was settled, we would not find that somebody put their beloved Monet painting on the wall, which was then ruined by water or something.
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor. This is a case where the only allegations are to the homes themselves. There is no allegation of personal property within the home being damaged. There is no allegation of bodily injury. As Mr. McNamer indicated, there's no allegation that the mold caused bodily injury. It is just the homes themselves.
Though there were benefits to hundreds of millions of mold and fungi spores,
the homes,
which would not otherwise have existed.
that is certainly one way to look at it, Your Honor. Yes.
You didn't know Chief Judge Easterbrook was such an environmentalist.
I did not. and again, from the property damage standpoint, that, you know, the key is, do we have damage to anything other than Sheehan's work? And Sheehan's work, because of the policy's definition of your work to include work on your behalf, is work that's performed by subcontractors, the entire project. And we simply don't have that here. I also want to note as well that twice before the Indiana Court of Appeals, general contractors have argued that the 1986 change, and in particular the subcontractor exception, should change the way that Indiana looks at the occurrence and the property damage issues. And in both R.N. Thompson as well as Worcester, the court said no.
Well, they denied transfer, right?
They did on R.N. Thompson. That's correct. Yes, and they are Court of Appeals decisions, but I think that the important thing there is that when Harvey, when the Indiana Supreme Court decided Harvey, and really is the linchpin in occurrence law now in Indiana, they did cite to R.N. Thompson with approval as to that is the appropriate occurrence analysis when you're dealing with commercial conduct as opposed to personal physical conduct. The court correctly characterized our problems with Mr. Corden's testimony. He is attempting to opine as to what an occurrence is and what property damage is and what the exclusions mean. And quite frankly, he got it wrong. And when you look at his deposition testimony, he said, I don't know what Indiana law is. I haven't researched it. And clearly, if Indiana law is different than these general principles that I'm espousing, then Indiana law controls. We've got that testimony cited in his brief. So I think even if you were inclined to look at that testimony, he admits he never looked at it.
His testimony should have been, if this claim had been presented to me, the first thing I would have done is research Indiana law.
If I were in his shoes, I would have either done that or hired somebody to do it. That's correct. Yes. We had also moved for summary judgment on the bad faith claim. I'm happy to discuss that if the court would like to address that issue as well.
I don't think it's necessary.
Okay. Well, I really have nothing else to add unless the court has any questions that I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Anything further, counsel?
All due respect to Mr. Smith, there is a new South Carolina case which brings coverage as we have asked this court to find. That is the Newman case, which has been cited in our briefs. The other point I would like to make is in the definition of property damage in these policies, it's not as restrictive as counsel for Westfield would ask the court to find it. Property damage is defined as physical injury to tangible property. That's it. It doesn't differentiate between Sheehan's work, subcontractor's work, homeowner's property, building, anything else. It's just physical injury to tangible property, and tangible property is there. Occurrence is premised upon accident, which is basically, was there an intent to do these things or to cause this harm, or wasn't there? And clearly, Sheehan had no intent to cause damage to these houses. It's an O-line Indianapolis construction company. It's been there for almost 100 years now. They build buildings. They had no intent.
The evidence of this case.
The
whole point is that they don't build buildings. They hire other people to build buildings in their name.
That's correct, Your Honor, as far as the actual construction itself. If the court has no further questions, I do thank you for oral argument in this case.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will take a brief recess before calling the second case this morning.